Welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Niebergall, and today I was joined by my friend Kurt Rollins from Kurt Rollins Fitness. You'll see him on Instagram at Kurt Rollins Fitness. Go give him a follow. You will love his content. He and I are preaching to the choir. We are preaching the same stuff. And he's super excited to talk about building muscle. So we talked a lot about building muscle and why women struggle with that sometimes. We talk about progressive overload, what that is. We talk about scale fluctuations and a ton more. This is a great conversation. So go grab some coffee, put up your feet, take a listen, or go put on your shoes, go for a walk and take a listen. I think you're going to really love this episode. Now, let's get to it. All right, Kurt, hello, hello. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Susan? Thanks so much for having me on.
This is great. And we can pretend like we haven't talked for the last 5 minutes. That's okay.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. It's all good. I'm down with that.
Kurt and I actually were just chatting before we hopped on here. We were chatting sports, actually, not fitness, but sports. I mean, the real important stuff, right? You're talking about football and being a Packers fan, and I'm being a Redskins fan. And by the way, what I didn't tell you this, one of my former clients is a Green Bay Packers season ticket holder. And a couple of years ago, the Redskins played the Packers in Lambeau. So she invited me to come up.
So you got a chance to go to Lambeau?
Yeah.
Amazing. Yeah. Right. I mean, I'm biased, but is it not amazing?
It's completely amazing. I was in awe the whole time I was there, and it was mild. Like the temps were only in the 30s or something. I mean, it was like, I hit it on a good day. It wasn't like 3.
Yeah. I was going to say that's good. That's definitely a good day, but I've only been to a few stadiums, NFL stadiums. But there is nothing like Lambeau Field. It's just, so historic. It's almost like going to a college game, and it's such a Green Bay is kind of such like a podunk little town, right? There's nothing there except for Lambeau Field.
Yeah.
And I found everyone there seems to be like, you know, really friendly. Did you find that?
I was just going to say that. I mean, I'm wearing my Redskin gear, you know, and actually there were a good many little Redskin fans there. I was actually really surprised. But everybody was so nice, you know, and they had all these people walking around with dressed up in this old fashioned Packer stuff. And I had asked to have a picture taken. They're all so nice. You know, I mean, it was great.
They're great there. I've been to other stadiums, like I said, where they're really not that nice if you're from the opposing team, and they're just like, hey, welcome to the game. Probably because they know they're going to beat you if it's the Packers, at least recently.
Yeah, well, and they did.
Hey, welcome to our stadium. You know, I hope you enjoy getting beat because.
Yeah, well, and that's pretty much what happened, but it was okay.
Yeah, it's okay. It's just still a fun stadium to go to. And it sounds like you had a cool experience.
Yeah, it was great. It was great. So listen, why don't we just kind of start this whole thing off with, why don't you tell me a little bit about you, kind of your background and how you got to be where you are sitting today?
Sure. Okay. So, you know, first off, a little bit about me. So I am 40 years old. I live in Chicago. I have a personal training business. So I do actually mostly at this point now, I do a lot of one-on-one online coaching, but I also have an in-person training business. And I started that business in 2009. So I've been at it for a while. I've been training, since 2005. Mm. I've been in the game a long time, and it's really an industry where people generally don't usually last too long, at least with the in-person training, because they find out you got to work split shifts. You got to, really put in your time, and a lot of people get away from it. And, I'm proud to say I've been in it for about 15 years. As far as like certifications, I'm a certified strength and conditioning specialist through the National Strength and Conditioning Association. I have my bachelor's degree in exercise science. I've been a sports nutritionist through the International Society of Sports Nutrition. So I have a big background in training and nutrition, which I think is important. Especially with online coaching, I think it's important to have a good understanding of both. In terms of like how I actually got into physical fitness. So, you know, I started lifting in high school, started working out actually for football, started doing the bigger, faster, stronger program, which includes a lot of like barbell benching and deadlifts and stuff like that. And I was kind of the scrawny kid, you know, really skinny, wiry, didn't have a lot of muscle. So I found it really cool at that age that I could, you know, change my body so much at 15, 16 years old. And I ended up putting it on quite a bit of muscle and strength. And I just like immediately fell in love with it. You know, I think there's, when people start lifting, I was one of that, I guess that percentage of the population that just instantly, I was like, I love this. And that's why I got into it. It's a passion for me. And it changed my life. You know, I went from the scrawny kid, didn't have a lot of confidence. And I immediately, not only did I start to feel stronger, I had more confidence, and that's why I started to get into physical fitness. And then I actually was going to be a PE teacher in college. And so I got, I was going towards that degree, decided, well, I don't really want to do this. I still want to work with people. And so, yeah, I got my phys ed degree and then kind of started personal training from that point. And yeah, here we are today.
Wow. So you were going to do the PE teacher thing. I love it.
Yeah. And I actually want to coach football too. It just, yeah. You know, I started observing classes and stuff and just decided it wasn't something that was going to be a great fit for me. And the reason I got into it is because I love people. I'm a big people person, you know, and teaching seemed like a natural thing for me. And I just decided I didn't want to go that route. And so like one-on-one training, once I got into that, like I just absolutely fell in love with it. It was a perfect fit for me.
Cause I come from the education background too. Like I was a teacher and school counselor for 33 years. So yeah, you know, what we do and teaching and of course counseling, that they are the marriage. I mean, that's perfect. I mean, we are teachers, right? As coaches, we are teachers, 100%. And we do have to have counseling skills. We're not counselors, but boy, do we need to have that, that ability to listen and validate and get our people to feel like they're being heard, right?
100%. There's a lot of psychology and, like you said, counseling with clients for sure. There's a big mental aspect to it. It's not just, you know, hey, here's your workout, have fun. There's motivation, there's discipline, there's coaching involved. And that's the part I really, really love, working with people and getting them to, you know, be consistent and motivated. Like you said, there's a huge counseling aspect to it. Sometimes, you know, you feel like a psychologist when you're working with certain clients.
Oh, 100%. I was telling somebody recently that I don't think there's a day that goes by where I have not used my counseling background. You know, I mean, it's, and when I was in education, so I was a school counselor for most of my career and got certified as a trainer towards the end of my education career. And I just decided at the time, you know, I'm passionate about the fitness piece. And I have this background. I talk to people every day for a living. What a great marriage these two are, you know? And I'm a teacher, so I can teach people. I already knew, you know, so we bleed into these areas of education and coaching. And I mean, it all kind of melds into one area.
Absolutely. And you are just like, I will just say, you're just so natural with the teaching aspect of it, which is, you know, obviously why I started following you and started, you know, I love the stuff that you put out there. It's fantastic. And that, you know, you can't just have the knowledge, you got to be able to apply it and you got to be able to connect and build rapport with people.
Yeah.
And I think you're just awesome at it.
Well, I really appreciate that. That means a lot because I really take to heart my teaching background and my counseling background. And, you know, it's interesting because I was a music teacher and there are a lot of music teachers who are phenomenal musicians. Like they can play their instrument like nobody's business, but they can't teach others to play well. You know, they're not great teachers. Same thing. I feel like there are some coaches out there that look like, wow. I mean, you know, and they're in the gym doing all their stuff. You see all these videos, but they struggle with actually communicating with their clients and teaching them how to do things.
Two completely different things, right?
Right.
You could be the fittest person in the world, but that may not mean anything in terms of how you're able to coach someone. And sometimes it could actually maybe hurt you, right? Yeah. If you have fantastic genetics, nothing against anyone that does, but maybe you didn't have to work as hard as someone else who really understands maybe more the person who's average genetically and can connect with them more and understands, you know, how much work it actually takes to get there. Because it's not easy, as you know. It takes a lot of hard work and consistency, all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. I think in your bio, did I see that you coach primarily women? I mean, it says something like a women's weight loss coach.
That is exactly right. So I do tend to focus much more on training women. Not that I don't train men. I do have male clients.
Yeah, I do too.
So I just kind of made a decision to kind of market more towards women. And that was kind of early in my career. As I started training, you know, I'd say 80 to 90% of my clients were women.
Wow.
And so I found that I had a good rapport with women. I found that I really enjoyed getting them stronger. Mm-hmm. A lot of women, I think that I started with at least sort of feared strength training. You know, we'd have all these conversations of, you know, it's just, I don't want to lift too heavy. You know, I'm not looking to get bulky. And I just had to sort of dispel that stuff and put it to the side and say, hey, listen, actually the physical look that you're going for, if we actually start to push the weights and really start to challenge your body, that's actually going to give you the tone, the muscle. It's actually going to help you get lean that you're looking for. You just won't get the bulk that you're scared of. And so I just found that was a lot of fun for me. Working with women, like I said, just had a good rapport with them, and then just dispelling those huge myths of getting bulky, which I think it's actually gotten a lot better. I don't think as many women fall into that trap as they did maybe 15 years ago, but there still is a little bit of it around.
I mean, I agree. I think women, especially middle-aged women, I mean, because back for us, that's what we thought it was, right? Back for so many years. And I think it's kind of tough to fully get rid of that and trust, you know, that it's okay to lift heavyweight, that I'm not going to balloon up and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, it's interesting too, because if you think about it, I mean, think about how many guys struggle to bulk up. I mean, they, right. Okay. Right. You had just said that, and try. And you guys have a leg up, right? Cause you got the testosterone going for you. And it's so hard for you all to do it. Think about women, think about this. It's going to make it even harder for us to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Like you said, women don't have the hormonal profile to gain lots of size, no matter how they're training. And so what I found was, like, you know, once I started putting women on programs where they're doing 4 to 6 reps, 6 to 8 reps, I mean, close to failure, 8 to 10 reps, you know, that 4 to 10 rep range. And then after 6 to 8 weeks, they're like, I've never looked this good in my entire life. Then they start to become believers. And that's when they buy in, you know, and they would become clients for a long time, years sometimes, because they were like, okay, I trust you now. You were right. I didn't bulk up. I started to actually look and feel better. And then along with that comes the physical strength, right? To do all the everyday things. And, I think that's just as important as, you know, whatever, looking good, the aesthetics, is all the other benefits that come along with it.
I think that's the big thing I like to hammer home. It's not only the physical, I mean, it's physical strength, yes, and it's visible muscle, yes, but the mental component, the emotional component that comes with it, the confidence that comes with it, that improves your everyday life, right? It'll transfer over into your everyday life. Like, you think I would have started a business after retiring? My God, you know, retiring for doing something for 33 years. Starting over is not what I had in mind. You know, it was one of those things that it kind of developed, but it's like, I would never have done that if I hadn't gained some confidence along the way from all of this. There's no way. And that's the part that I feel like we have a hard time adequately describing what it feels like. But when you're there, you will know exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. I think totally agree. You got to experience it. You can only talk about it so much, right?
Yeah.
That's my goal, to get as many women in the gym as possible strength training. Because I've just seen it change so many lives.
Yeah. Why do you think so many women struggle with building muscle? I mean, they all say that they want to, and they use the word tone, and you know, we can define what that is, which is muscle. You have to have muscle in order to show any kind of leanness, definition, whatever. But why do you feel like so many women struggle with it?
Oh God. I mean, I could go on probably for multiple hours about this. There are so many different reasons. I mean, let's start with like some of the stuff that's kind of perpetuated by like some of these like boot camps or classes. And again, nothing against those if someone enjoys doing them. I have no problem with someone doing like Orange Theory or something like that. But one of the issues is we know the basic principle of building muscle includes progressive overload. And that simply says, hey, okay, what did you do last time you're in the gym? Let's try to either increase your weight or maybe increase your reps with the same movements, right? And for the most part, that type of programming you're not going to see in a lot of these classes. I think a lot of women fall into the trap of, you know, light weights and higher reps is good for toning. I don't know where that came from.
I don't either. And to hit on that, I think I made a post about this a while ago. And basically, you know, I like having different rep schemes, right? The single digit reps and then the higher reps too. I think there's a place for all of it, but just because you have double digit reps, 15, 20, whatever, doesn't mean you use light weight. You know, Where did that come from? Use however much weight you can do for those 20 reps, right? It doesn't mean just because it says 20 that you go and pick up those little pink dumbbells and say, well, I'm just going to do 20 with this. No.
Exactly right. I actually touched on that. One of my posts today or yesterday, I can't remember which one, I said the exact same thing. I said high reps, 100% fine. Actually, very, very great way to train if you do it correctly. The problem is, I think people, exactly like you said, they'll go do 20 reps and they get to 20 and they're like, oh, I could have done 10 more. Okay, well, that's, you're basically turning it into kind of a cardio workout. Yeah. That's not going to do anything to build muscle. You know, if you get to 20 and you're like, man, you know, I may have had one or two more reps in there. Cool. Okay. Now that the 20 reps is going to be effective. And then maybe next time you do it, you know, you're trying to do a little bit more weights or you add another rep or two. Okay, you can build muscle in the high rep ranges. So I, you know, maybe it's because the higher reps, people feel like they're sweating more and, oh, I'm burning fat if I'm sweating. And we know that there's no correlation between like breaking a lot of sweat and burning body fat. It's much more nutrition based. I feel like people fall into that trap of just, you know, I need to do high reps and I need to sweat as much as I can. And I shouldn't be resting because my heart rate needs to stay high. And, you know, I'm looking at my watch to see how many calories I burned. And
more is better, right? More is always better.
Yeah. More. I didn't train enough this week. I'm going to train six days because I only been training four. And so I need to add more workouts in when it's really not about any of that stuff, right? It's like, I know we have similar philosophies, maybe not exactly the same, but I'm a big fan of like, okay, hey, let's make your workouts intense. Let's stay for the most part, probably between 3 and 12 reps on mostly compound movements. Isolation, great. But you want to be focusing mostly on compound and sprinkle in the isolation. Let's try to go up in weight and reps. And then, you know, take your rest days. Give yourself maybe at least one, if not maybe even 2 or 3 days a week where you're not really doing much besides maybe walking. So your body can recover. And that way you can work out 3 to 4 times a week intensely. And so that way you actually feel like you need the rest days. You know, if you're doing 6 days a week, that might tell yourself, you know, yourself like, okay, well, maybe I'm not actually working out hard enough if I can just go in the next day and do it again.
You know, I think so many people, and I agree with that 100%. I feel like so many people need to dial back the amount of workouts, but also they need to work harder for those workouts. You know, it's both of those things. You need less, but now you got to work harder. And that's kind of hard for some people to comprehend. How can I work out less and get, you know, the benefits, the results, whatever, because they're coming from the more is better. You know, 4 workouts are great, man, 6 must be phenomenal.
Right. And 6, as you know, that might be good for someone who's a bodybuilder who does nothing else but work out and eat and sleep. Their entire life is dedicated to training. Okay. Maybe it works for him. That's not 99% of people, just like you said. You and I hammer this concept home quite a bit. You're not building muscle while you're working out. You're building muscle on the day that you are resting. Your workout is actually breaking your body down. So the next day, okay, give your body the rest it needs, let it, recover. And then that way, the next day you can come in and hit it hard again.
And that's a point that I think people lose sight of with rest days, that it will make your next workout more effective because your body is recovered and ready to go. And it also improves your relationship with exercise. I mean, I feel like we talk about relationship with food a lot, but if we look at our relationship with exercise, that's equally as important, because I had the disordered relationship with exercise. I was that girl 6 or 7 days a week, 2-a-days, you know, more, blah, blah. And yeah. I was doing all that out of fear. Like, I was afraid not to, because I was afraid I wasn't going to improve. I wasn't going to progress. I was going to lose my progress, get fat, all those things. That's what was driving me. And I feel like I see this a lot. And because I have people tell me, oh yeah, but I work out that much because I just love it. And I'm like, come on, stop. I mean, I love it too, but let's right. be honest about this. Taking a rest day scares some people, and it scares them because they're afraid. And they're, mm-hmm. and when fear starts kind of driving your relationship with exercise, like you're afraid not to work out, that's a problem.
Oh, 100%. Now, do you feel like when you were doing that, one, I'm guessing you didn't get as nearly as good a results as what you're doing now, which is what, like four, you're doing upper lower split, like 4 days a week?
4 days a week.
Yeah. And you're resting the other days. I don't know if you're doing cardio, but you're not lifting the other days.
No.
Do you feel like it was like, you know, I ate this, and so now I need to go in and work it off? Or was it just like, okay, I just need to do as much as I can possibly do to get as lean and, you know, as I can? Was it more of that, or were you trying to work off the food?
I think I have gone through both periods of that. For me, I was afraid that I was going to lose progress if I deviated from this 6 day, 2 a day kind of thing, right? And the irony with all of that was I was making no progress, right? I was tired all the time. My sleep sucked, which compounded everything. I was dragging my ass to the gym more often than not, as opposed to I can't wait to get in there. You know, right. everything changed, but I kept doing it because I was afraid to let go. You know, and so when I first started working with Jordan and he was writing my programs, he wrote 4 day a week. And I'm like, what am I supposed to do the other 3 days?
Like, what are you missing? You're missing 3 days here, man. Where are the
I said, there's gotta be something missing here. He laughed. He goes, no, you rest. And I whined about that to the point where he said, okay. You know, I'm sure he was rolling his eyes. He was saying, you can go to the gym, hop on a bike, but don't let your heart rate get over like 110 or something super low. And I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to go to the gym so I can work. And I go to the gym and I get on the bike. And I'm like, oh my God, this is miserable. Trying to keep my heart rate this low. He did this on purpose. I know he did. He taught me the lesson really quickly. Yeah. And so I texted him back and I said, I will never do this again. I trust you. And so I never did. And I will tell you this, that was the game changer for my building muscle and for my progress, was allowing my body to rest and scaling it back to 4 days.
And you probably saw the results and then you bought in. It was like, okay, this guy actually knows what he's talking about. And then from there on, it's like, awesome. You just sort of maintain that schedule. So I had something similar with overtraining in my 20s, although I wasn't doing it 6 days a week. I was doing it a little bit differently. I was actually working out to failure every set, every exercise, like 3 days a week, full body. After the session, I'm doing high intensity interval training on the treadmill because, you know, I had started reading, okay, well, the intervals are going to help with fat loss. But the same thing happened to me where I was, I'd sit on the couch at 6 p.m. and I would fall asleep. And that was a pretty telltale sign. You shouldn't be falling asleep at 6 p.m. That I was overtraining and doing too much. So that was just kind of like a wake up call for me. Like, hey, more is not better. You need to actually find something close to what I like to call the minimal effective dose. Like, what's the least amount you can do, still live your life and still get the results you want, because your body's going to need recovery. And certainly, you know, like I said, I'm 40 years old. As I've gotten older, recovery becomes more important. The principles don't change. You still train.
Just wait.
You still train hard, right? You can still train hard. But the thing I've noticed is, you know, my strength is actually probably better than it's ever been, but it probably takes me another day to kind of recover, maybe as opposed to 10 years ago. And so I've just learned to really, really prioritize it. It's easier as you get older, you know, as opposed to 25 with some of that stuff.
And it continues to change as you get older. I will say that, recovery is a lot different for me now. I listen to my body. You know, it's interesting. The last 2 days I've been in the gym, they, you know, like normal, most of your workouts are pretty good. Some are like phenomenal and some are, you know, and I've had the the past couple of days where what I lifted last week feels like crap this week for whatever reason. Right. And I've learned to listen instead of just saying, oh, no, I did it last week. I'm going to do it this week, you know, come hell or high water. You know, I don't do that anymore. And I feel like learning that lesson too, along with scaling back the amount of days, that has helped for longevity, you know, for me.
Oh, 100%. I've fallen into the same trap where maybe I, you know, have at times focused too much on progressive overload, where I'm like, I'm going to go up on every exercise, every single workout. I'm going to raise my weight. I don't care how I feel. And unfortunately, that's led to, knock on wood, I haven't had major injuries, but I've, you know, tweaked my back, tweaked my shoulder, my elbow, little things where I'm like, hey, okay, now I can't train that movement for 2 weeks. And it is important to listen to your body. You know, progressive overload doesn't mean everything goes up every single workout, you know, every week. There's going to be periods where you're going to have to tail back and, you know, take a deload. And like you said, there's workouts. It's totally normal to have weeks where you're like, well, what the heck's going on here? Like this weight actually felt good. And now this week, why does it not feel good? Well, you're human. You're not a robot.
Welcome to the human race.
Welcome to the human race. Everybody has days like that. And you just, you know, whatever, maybe you need to check the box that day and save it for another day, as opposed to I'm going to push the weight. And God forbid, like, you know, like I said, you tweak something. You know, that's not a good idea either. So you kind of need to find that middle ground.
I feel like women also struggle with building muscle, middle-aged women in particular, because they don't push themselves enough. In all honesty, they are stronger than they think. They're afraid to push a little bit because for a lot of reasons. One, maybe they don't know exactly what they're doing. They don't feel confident with what they're doing yet. They don't know what to do. They're afraid of getting injured, you know, that whole mindset piece. And I feel like that is holding so many people back from truly building the physique or the muscle, whatever it is that the strength that they want to build. And I honestly feel like if you go into a working out to not get injured, guess what's going to happen? Probably you're going to probably tweak something because your body's going to compensate all over the place in ways that it shouldn't be compensating. And I guess because of these fears, a lot of women don't trust. They don't kind of see the process through. Have you seen that?
Yeah. I think, you know, and I do have clients, most of my clients are women. I have plenty of women that I train in their 40s and 50s. And, you know, while I will say, certainly for someone who's, you know, 45 or 50 versus someone who's maybe 25, things are generally going to be a little bit tougher. I'd be lying if I was saying that it wouldn't be, right? You know, certainly with menopause and hormones, that can affect things, but it doesn't change the principles. I think that's important to understand, so that it doesn't change the basic principles of progressive overload. And in terms of like women in those age ranges, I think being a little bit, you know, scared to push it. And I would agree with that. I've seen that with some of my own clients. I think it is easier for maybe some of the younger women to push themselves. I do think that, you know, some of the older women that maybe that generation, the weight training was not even nearly as prevalent, right? I think if you look at like 25 and 30-year-old women now, weight training's been promoted for women, I would say, pretty well the last maybe 15 to 20 years. For some of the older women, they were never exposed to it. 20 years ago, you know, it was just cardio and maybe like step classes and kickboxing maybe. So for them to just get into it now does put them at a disadvantage. And I have seen that with some of my own clients. However, I mean, I've also seen a lot of my female clients in their 40s and 50s get really, really strong. So it's not the case for everybody. You know, I've seen a lot of those clients also lose fat. I think there's this belief. I've talked to so many women, I don't know if you have, you know, after 45, I can't lose weight now. Everything's changed. I just can't lose weight. It's like, well, let me show you these clients who are 48, 49, early 50s who have actually lost a lot of weight doing the program. So sure. I think getting rid of those false beliefs is important. Working up slowly for someone who might be older. I mean, look at you.
You know, and it's interesting because I was that person. that thought I couldn't lose weight. I mean, you know, that it was menopause. I blamed everything except the lack of work that I was doing, you know, I mean, but in all honesty, I thought for real that I was doing everything right. And I wasn't. And it wasn't until I could accept that, that things started to change. And the good news here is that, and this is why I wrote the book with the subtitle, It's Never Too Late, because I really truly feel like it's never too late for you to make whatever change you want to make, but there's a caveat to that. It requires work. It requires consistent effort. And sometimes it can be intimidating. Sometimes it's uncomfortable, all those things. But if you keep after it, you will see change. And I feel like that's why I kind of want to be in the forefront for people my age. Frankly, I don't really know anybody older than me. I think almost everybody on the planet is younger than me. I know that's not true. I know. So people stop, don't message me. I know there are people that are younger than me, but I feel like in the industry, there's not a lot of people in their 60s that are out here trying to get, you know, there just aren't a lot of us. And I want to make it clear to everyone in middle age that, man, you can do this, right? But you're going to have to roll up the sleeves, because as you said earlier, Kurt, things get tougher as you get older. I mean, everything is harder when you get older. I mean, getting up in the morning is harder and when you get older. Making friends is harder when you are older. So building muscle is going to be hard too.
Yeah. And just to go back to something you said, you don't know a lot of people in the industry that are 60, are you 60, 61?
I'm 61.
Isn't that kind of cool though? Like, do you feel like that's pretty cool that you're, or is that like intimidating? Like, oh, I'm older than
others. No, you know what? I do. I think it is kind of cool, to be honest with you. I want to be the trailblazer kind of, right? And so, yeah, from that point, it's cool in a way, but it's also kind of lonely. Because I don't have a lot of peers, you know? I mean, you and I are 20 years apart. I could be your mother. I mean, I could be everybody's mother, you know, and which is okay. It's a role I take on, because a lot of our colleagues, and we hang in the similar circles of people. I feel like they are my other kids, you know? And everyone has welcomed me in with open arms, despite the age difference. And it's interesting because the age difference, you know, Jordan and I partner together. He's 31. I mean, we're 30 years apart. And we talk about this. It doesn't faze him at all. He doesn't even think about it. I do, because when I was his age, this would never have happened. Right.
Yeah.
And so this is what I know, but he's like, I don't care how old you are. It doesn't matter to me, blah, blah, blah. But to me, it's like, wow, this is crazy that these people who are that much younger than me accept me and will be friends with me or whatever, you know.
Yeah, I personally think it's awesome. I think it's an industry where it probably is a little bit tougher to get older. I can say that because I've been in the industry since it's, you know, I'm 25. It's a lot of it's based on aesthetics and ripped abs and being tan and youthful. And so I really, really look up to you. I hope you take that as a compliment.
I do. Thank you. I do.
Because it is not easy to be in this industry. And again, I'm 40. I don't feel like I'm old. I feel like I'm kind of like, I'm not old, but I'm not young anymore. So it's a tougher industry to maybe get older in, and you know, it's not going to change my stance, but I really, really admire what you do. I think it's awesome. So I just want to mention that. And I think I totally forgot your question. My apologies.
Well, we're just going to chat.
Yeah.
One thing that was popping up with me is we're talking about building muscle and that is the nutrition part of it.
Yeah.
And I think this is where a lot of middle-aged women struggle too, because we were brought up on so many different things over the decades, right? Some crazy stuff. And really thinking that we can only eat, I'll use that number, 1200 or 1000, you know, calories. And that's the only way that we can lose weight. We were not brought up with scale fluctuations. All we did is go to the doctor's office and stand on that stupid scale that had the block that they kept moving. And you just were praying to God, they stop, you know, and if the scale went up, that was bad. It was just period. It was bad. And if the scale goes down, hey, that's great. Right. There was any kind of perspective to that or anything. And I feel like that is still prevalent with middle-aged women.
100%. I would agree with that. And, you know, yes, I use the scale with my clients, right? Online coaching, it's a way to measure, it's something to measure progress. However, when people start, I always tell them, this is probably like number four on the list in terms of ways that we measure progress. Let's pay more attention to progress pictures. How are you feeling? How are your energy levels? The process, right? Are you getting stronger in your workouts? What about your measurements? Let's take your, you know, waist, hips, thigh, you know, what's happening with those? How are your clothes fitting? Those things just come like head and shoulders above body weight, because as you know, especially when someone starts training, they can recomposition to some extent where they might be gaining muscle and losing fat at the same time. Sure, that's harder for that to happen the more you train. But if someone doesn't have a lot of experience, it's actually, not uncommon. And so, you know, someone might, if only they're only doing the scale and they're, 2 weeks in, oh my gosh, like nothing's happening. Oh, well, what about your clothes? Oh, well, you know, my pants are fitting better. And you start to have those conversations. Those are such just like much better indicators of progress. And I've had those freak out situations with clients. I mean, I've even had somebody 6 days in whose body weight didn't change, who said, I'm doing everything right and nothing's happening. And I was
6 days.
I was like, it's not even been a week yet.
Yeah.
Really, like, you could not lose weight. If your goal is weight loss, your weight might stay the same if you're only weighing in once a week for 2 weeks, or, 15 to 20 days. And you might be doing everything right. You could be retaining some water. You might have some more glycogen from the strength training. We don't really know. I've had somebody lose a total of like 18 pounds in 90 days, and they didn't lose any weight for the first 2 weeks. And we got on a call because she was freaking out. And I looked at her numbers and I'm like, don't change anything. I'm not lowering your calories. Yeah. Like, we just need to see what happens. You know, people always want to let's eat less, and I'm like, that's the last thing I'm going to do. Like, yeah. That's the very last thing you want to do is lower somebody's calories if they're strength training, and they're trying to lose weight. So, the scale, I'm not going to say, oh, throw it in the trash. You don't need to use it. It's fine. Use it for what it's worth, but don't, it's not the only thing to use. The other markers are so much more important.
100%. And in fairness to the people who gave it 6-7 days and thought, this ain't working, I relate to that to some degree. And I truly believe it's because we didn't know, we don't understand scale fluctuations. We don't understand that the scale day to day is going to move all around. And I feel like that's a lack of education from decades of thinking otherwise. Intuitively, I've been perfect. Why is the scale not moving? You know, just on the surface, it sounds like, okay. But when you dive deeper into it, oh yeah, water every single day, you're losing, you're gaining water, you're holding on to water. I mean, day to day, it's about water. And I always tell people, step out of it and give yourself 30 days at least. And then you can start comparing day one to day 31, day two to 32, and start looking at trends, because people get so caught up in the day-to-day ups and downs, which are just what they are, ups and downs. They don't realize that they're actually losing overall until they step back and they see, oh, I've lost 2 pounds this month or whatever, you know?
Right. Yeah, totally. Pay attention to the long-term changes. Look at where you started, where are you at now? It's more important, like you said, exactly. Look at the changes over several weeks or even months. Day to day, if you see daily fluctuations, that's generally not going to be a significant amount of muscle or fat. It's more likely water and glycogen. And those two things, don't really matter too much. If you want to, if you had gained 2 pounds of fat, that means technically you overate by 7,000 calories.
Yeah. That's over maintenance.
Yeah, exactly. Not just 7,000 calories, period. That's 7,000 over your maintenance.
Yeah.
That would be almost impossible to physiologically do. I'm sure it could be done, but that would be like you had 2 entire birthday cakes to yourself. No one's doing that. So once people start understanding the calorie, the whole calorie portion of it, And like you said, I think people are getting better,
but
I'll tell you, I still have a large percentage of clients who don't understand that part of it. And we really have to educate them, like, hey, water, glycogen, totally normal.
Yeah.
If someone's weighing themselves once a week, that can be problematic because
of the
change. they don't see a change after a week, they're like, oh my gosh, you know, it's the same. What happened? I'm like, you know, you probably need to see some daily fluctuations and take your average weekly weight, because that is what you want to see go down. If you're doing once a week, then you need to wait 3-4 weeks to make any sort of assessment, not one, to really see what's going on.
You know, so many people are afraid to step on the scale because the number, they get all emotional about it, right? And they start attaching these things to these emotions, and emotion just takes over, right? And so they hate stepping on the scale. And I feel like when you weigh in once a week or every other week or whatever it is, it becomes an event, right? It's weigh-in day, right? And what people tend to do is they tend to alter their behaviors leading up to weigh-in day. So they see a number they want to see instead of staying the course, right? Whereas when you do it every day, you are facing your fear. And that is legitimately the only way the scale is not going to own you anymore, is when you face it and you start having conversations with yourself. Like I'm really big on telling people to tell themselves to shut up. Like when emotion starts going on, you step on the scale, it's not a number you want to see, and emotion starts getting, oh no, it's not working, and all these things, you have to tell yourself, no, shut up, Susan. You didn't eat that many calories yesterday. You are fine, and move on. Like I'm really big on that. And to be clear, nobody likes seeing the scale go up. I don't care who they are. And if they say, oh yeah, this is okay. No, it's not. No one likes it. I don't like it. And when I step on it, today was a great example. Yeah, my scale went up a little bit. I don't like it. But the difference now is, okay, I can still not like it, but now I'm not letting emotion just consume me and think I'm doing everything wrong and nothing's working and I need to restrict. You know what I mean? It's okay to feel something, but it's not okay to let that fear just kind of drive the car.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would think too, if you're doing it every day, eventually it just becomes sort of routine. There's less emotion attached to it, you know, by whatever, a few weeks, a few months in, you're like, this is just something I do. And hopefully it becomes less emotion, a little bit more logic. If it does go up a little bit, and especially if you're tracking calories, you know, not everyone has to track, but if you're tracking and you can look at your numbers, you can say, okay, I know I didn't overeat by 5,000 calories. So I'm more likely retaining, you know, some water and some glycogen, and, you know, not that big of a deal. And the scale can be helpful in that way if you're doing it every day, because it sort of keeps you on track, right? Now, gain 5 pounds, 6, 7, 8 pounds over a month. Okay, well, that might be telling you that, yes, you are gaining some fat. So it can help in that regard. But yeah, the day-to-day is just,
it's like the stock market, right? You invest in the stock market for the long haul. You don't invest it day to day. You can check it day to day and you're going to see it go down. You're going to see, and you're going to be tempted to pull your money out, but wait a day, because it's probably going to go back up. You know, I mean, it works its way, and you can't let that roller coaster get to you to the point where emotion now tells you, oh, you better pull out your money. You know, you're in it for the long haul. Like when we invested money, when my son was born, we weren't going to pull that out until he was in college, you know? Yeah. So we had a long time, and it went through the gamut, as you can imagine stocks do over decades.
Yeah.
You know, it's the same thing. I feel like with your weight, you're in this for the long haul, a sustainable way of doing things. Yes, it's going to spike, and it's going to spike for what appears to be no apparent reason. Yes, you're going to be pissed, and yes, you move on. You know, that's pretty much it.
Exactly. I like that analogy. You don't just take your money out of the stock market because, you know, it might be lower over you know, a week or a day. Long-term, it's going to go up, and long-term you're going to be fine. If you're following the principles, the deficit, you know, strength training, and you're being consistent, the daily fluctuations really are essentially meaningless.
They truly are meaningless. And I always get people, well, then how do I know if I'm really losing fat? Because you step back over the course of a couple months and look at your trends. That's how you're going to know. And then with all the markers you were talking about, you know, the measurements, the clothes, your energy, all those other things that really mean more in the bigger picture anyway.
Yep, exactly. And that's why do people want to lose weight in the first place? They want to lose weight to feel better about themselves, to fit back into their clothes. And as you probably know, most people who have are attached to that number on the scale, when they start strength training, I mentally prepare them. You might not really get to that number, you might more or less have a physique goal. And if you're adding 8 to 10 pounds of muscle, let's say over several months, and you're losing fat, if you're telling me you want to weigh 150 pounds, you might weigh 158 and look way better than you imagined at 150. That's because you're adding muscle.
Yeah.
So be more attached to, you know, maybe your physique or a look as opposed to this number on the scale.
Yeah.
Because yeah, if you want to lose the most amount of scale weight possible, don't strength train because you're going to add muscle. Just diet the whole time. And that's how your scale weight is going to go down. Now, obviously I'm not suggesting you do that, but that's the best way to lose scale weight. You don't want to exercise because the added muscle is going to make your scale weight go up a little bit, but in the end, physically, you're going to look and feel better.
Yeah. And when you just do that and not add exercise in, you're a smaller version of yourself and you don't look anything like you thought you were going to look. It always ends up that way.
Yeah. And it's just harder to maintain if you're if you're just dieting down, you know, you lose more muscle, your metabolism goes down. A lot of people that diet that way aren't eating in a sustainable way. So they get to their weight and then they go back to what they were doing and they gain the weight back. Whereas if you're doing it combined with weight training, it's a slower process. But at the same time, it's a more sustainable process and the weight actually stays off because now you've kept your metabolism as high as possible with the weight training. So it's the best route to go.
So what do you do with people? And because I get this all the time, people who swear that they are eating 1,200 calories and aren't losing weight. And they swear they're tracking, they're doing this. How do you work with someone like that? What do you tell them?
So I have had clients like that, right? I think that there are a number of different things that you have to look at here. One is like, okay, what is their dieting history, right? Obviously, we don't really know if they're eating this many calories. We know people chronically, unintentionally, for the most part, people aren't doing it on purpose, but they unintentionally underreport calories. Mm-hmm. Even dietitians, we've seen that, right? They just claim that they're eating a certain number of calories and they're actually not eating that. But I mean, if someone truly is dieting on very, very low calories for a very long period of time, we know there's metabolic adaptation, right? Your body will slowly, what used to be a deficit will slowly become your maintenance calories. Now, is that happening?
And that's not bad. That's normal.
That's normal. That's normal. There's all these different things that you can do to stave that off and prevent it, right? Like you're at a deficit.
Move slower.
Exactly. Depending on how much weight you have to lose. There's so many individual characteristics here, but if you're dieting, usually after several months, you probably want to take a diet break, or you might want to go to maintenance and focus on building muscle. But like if someone's claiming that they're not losing weight on those calories, I think first you actually have to find out if they're really truly eating that many calories. Yeah. So, okay. Are you weighing and measuring your food? Because some people might be just estimating and they're not using a food scale. Is it more tedious? Of course it is. But if you're coming to me with a problem and we need to be as precise as possible, that may be a route you need to go. You might need to weigh your food. Yeah. At that low of calories, every little bit sort of does count.
Right? Yeah, for sure.
The lower your calories are, the more imperative it is.
Well, the less wiggle room you have, right?
I mean, you don't have wiggle room. Exactly. And make sure you're tracking 7 days a week, right? I have a number of clients who are like, I've tracked macros. I've done it for a long time. And then if I look at somebody's calendar, and the most common thing to do is track, Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday and take the weekend off. I'm like, that's just not going to work.
That's not going to work.
No idea what you're eating Saturday, Sunday. As you know, tracking calories works best when not only are you as precise as possible, but you're as thorough as possible. And that includes tracking 7 days per week. And that's what I find, I think, for a lot of these people is maybe they are not doing that. Now, for someone who is like really chronically actually having that many calories, obviously you don't have the option of lowering their calories. You can't say, hey, you're eating 1,100. Let's take you to 850 to 1,000 so you can lose more weight. Your only option at that point for somebody that low is to, take them up to maintenance or reverse diet them. And I think that can be a really tough conversation for somebody who wants to lose weight as quickly as possible, because then you have to explain to them, you're going to actually need to eat more calories for several months to get your metabolism up. We need to build some muscle. You're not really going to gain fat, but you're also not going to lose weight eating more calories. This right. is the only route to go at that point in time. You don't really have an option. Like I said, like if I told somebody to do that, like you should fire me. If I'm telling you to eat less yeah. calories, than, you know, 1100 or whatever it is. So yeah, that's an option as well. I do think that happens for some women, but I think the first thing you have to do is track consistency and precision.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I want to put out here too, that, you know, people use the word metabolic damage and it's like, you know, and what people don't understand, I think, is that term, first of all, is used incorrectly so often, and it's a scare thing, and it sounds scary and it sounds bad. And what it's very rare. It's very rare that you've damaged anything. Right. What happens is it's an adjustment. Your metabolism has adjusted. That's very different than damage, you know, yeah. And it's normal that your metabolism will go down slightly as you lose weight. It's not this huge dip that we think it is, because then I feel like people start, well, this is the reason I'm a victim now, right? You know, I get into the, I'm a victim. It's happening to me. And it's something bad, and it's not. It's kind of a normal part of the process that, to be honest, when I was going through all this, I didn't even pay attention. I mean, I didn't even know. I just kind of got a sustainable way of doing things and stopped paying attention and started paying attention to what I was doing in the gym. And it all kind of, you know, you focus on things that you can control as opposed to some of the things you can't, and things kind of happen.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree that the damage thing, from what I've read, it really doesn't exist. I think, and what people might be implying with damage is, oh, I'm permanently affected. I'm never going to be able to fix my metabolism. Now this is just how I am. And that's not the case.
No.
You know, like you said, as you do lose weight and you eat more calories, your body adjusts to that. A smaller body takes less calories to move. You know, as you eat fewer calories, yes, your body will down regulate metabolism. Yep. It's not going to burn as many calories. So how do you fix that? Well, yeah, you eat more and you can, again, reverse diet to do that. Which is definitely one of my recommendations. Nobody should be, the goal is not to be, you know, eating in a deficit for the rest of your life.
100%.
You need to eventually get to maintenance. And so, yeah, if you do want to help with your metabolism, you should be strength training. You should have, again, phases where, or, you know, you're eating maintenance calories, or taking breaks, you know, where you have like a week or two where your calories go back to maintenance, and then you can diet again. Probably a little bit too much to like go into like specifics, you know, on this podcast, like exactly what you do. But yeah, the idea that you've permanently damaged your metabolism because you've dieted a lot in your life, that's just not the case. They've shown that no one is really permanently damaged. You can fix that by, everything we talked about, eating more, phases of maintenance, breaking, if you are dieting.
And I'll tell you what, I am a huge believer that maintenance is the most powerful thing you could ever learn. How to maintain your weight, wherever your weight is. Learning to maintain that gives you complete power. You can eat a little less and you'll be in a deficit. You can eat a little more and be in a surplus, depending on where your goals are. And people talk about, well, I don't want to track forever. Well, this is one step. Learn this through tracking and through weighing food and stuff. Learn where your maintenance actually is and how you eat to maintain your weight, because that is, to me, the door to open to not tracking, you know, and because this is my life, I haven't tracked a calorie in years, even through muscle building. Like I went through 6 months of a surplus. I never tracked a single calorie. I didn't have to, because I knew my maintenance. I picked 4 days during the week where I ate more. That was it. That's how I did it. You know, it can be that simple, but you need to put in some work before that, right? To learn what works for you to maintain your weight. And I will say this, once you get into maintenance, you may never, ever want to leave, which is cool, because this is where we all should be living really anyway, right? I mean, this is our life. And for someone at my age, I will probably never track a calorie or a, God forbid, track a carb, or I've never tracked a carb, but I will never track anything probably ever again. And this is what can be for anybody, right? I mean, and it's the place where I think it's the goal that we all want to shoot for.
Totally. But, and I agree with you. I explain that to people because I'm sure this happened to you, right? You talk to people and I mentioned, look, first 3 months of my program, at least my clients are going to track calories. And I ask straight up, what are your thoughts on that? I've tracked calories before. And then I explain to them, look, put in the work on the front end. You don't have to track calories forever. That is never the goal, to track calories for the rest of your life. But if you put it in on the front end, you start to learn the basic caloric value of foods. You start to get some like go-to meals and snacks, things that work for you. You learn how to get more protein in. Eventually you can get away from it. And then, like you said, maintenance becomes easy. You sort of like, whatever you want to call it, pseudo calorie cycle. You have slightly higher days and lower days, and you net out around maintenance. You know, there's a range for maintenance. It's never an exact number, obviously. Right. I think a lot of people too get scared when they start maybe in a deficit. They're like, is this how I eat for the rest of my life? I'm like, no, this is the deficit. Like, we want to get you to eating more calories.
Yeah.
The more muscle you have, the easier it's going to be for you to eat more and maintain your weight. That's why it's so important to strength train. So like you said, the goal is always maintenance. That's a much more enjoyable lifestyle. Dieting is stressful. It's not easy. You know, we understand that it's not easy to be in a deficit. You're going to have a little bit of hunger and a little bit of suffering. You want to try to control it as much as you can with, you know, plenty of fiber and protein and all that stuff, but it's still not going to be easy.
Yeah.
If you do that, then if you're as consistent as you possibly can be in that deficit, it allows you to go to maintenance as soon as you can. Whereas if you're less consistent with the diet, if you're kind of half-assing it and, you know, doing it 60% of the time, man, you're going to be dieting for a long time. You're just extending it. So, you know, you decide what works for you, but yeah, I'm on board with getting to maintenance as soon as you can would be my advice.
Amen. Yeah. So let's wind this up with, give me your three, I don't know, two or three, whatever, however many, I don't care. Three, like your top tips for middle-aged women in particular for reaching their goals, weight loss, building muscle, or all of the above. Just three things that you think will be helpful for everybody.
Okay. For middle-aged women. Okay. So my top three tips, number one would be prioritize protein, specifically at getting at least 1 gram per pound of body weight, but even trending towards higher, like 1.2. What we know is as you get older, protein breakdown increases, protein breakdown increases, protein synthesis decreases. And so actually you need more protein as you age. So as much as important as it is for, you know, a 25-year-old to get, you know, a gram of protein per pound of body weight, it's even more important for you. So make sure that you are prioritizing protein. If you need to supplement, do it. I'm not, you know, don't be shy of having a 30-gram protein shake after your workout. It's not always easy to hit those numbers with just whole foods. Yeah. So don't be shy of the supplements. I'm a big fan of those if they work for people. Number two would be, don't be afraid of the heavy weights. So yes, you know, everyone should be lifting heavy, even, you know, if you are 45, 50, 55 years old. What you may find is you may need to make adjustments, right? You may need to adjust. You may not be able to barbell deadlift or, you know, barbell bench press because you might have, an injury history or something like that, but still find variations that work for you. Maybe it's dumbbell bench pressing. Maybe it's single arm dumbbell bench pressing or Bulgarian split squats because a deadlift bothers your back. But don't just stay away from heavy weights because certain lifts don't work for you. Find what works for you.
You just hit all my favorites in that one little sentence.
I feel like people get married to, you know, squat, deadlift, and bench press. Those are great.
Yeah.
I don't do a lot of barbell squatting. You know, I'm 40 or barbell deadlifting from the floor, but I found variations that work for me. Single leg deadlifting, Bulgarians, as much as everyone hates those, that's a great variation. It puts less stress on your low back.
Yeah.
Still push the progressive overload principle with the exercises that are going to work for you and your body. Different things work, for different people. Now, and I don't know if this is something that you do, it's definitely not required, but I would also suggest, if you're already nailing the training and the protein, you got to nail that first. I would definitely consider supplementing with creatine. Not required, right? Definitely not required. It would fall further down the list besides the protein intake and the progressive overload with the strength training. But I have used it with clients. I found it to be very, very helpful. In terms of building muscle and strength, it's got other benefits, other psychological benefits that have been in the research, not required. Again, But if you're nailing the other parts and you're consistent, that is something that you could try that could work really well for you. So those would be my top three tips for women, I guess, that are older in terms of building muscle.
I love that you kind of put the little caveat to nail nutrition and training first, because I get asked about creatine as much as I do almost anything else. People assume I've never taken creatine, to be honest. And it's not that I have anything against it. I have nothing against it. When I first started this seriously 7 years ago, I just didn't know. I didn't know anything about it, to be honest. And I just started making all this progress. And I'm like, why do I need to take anything? I don't need to take anything. And so now the research is coming out that there's a lot of cognitive benefits to creatine as well. So I might do a little trial with creatine myself for that reason. Like, I feel like I don't need it performance wise. Maybe it'll help me performance wise. I don't know, but I like that you said, get the basic stuff down first. That's got to come first.
Yeah, exactly. Creatine is not even, shouldn't even be a consideration unless you're hitting your training and you have your nutrition nailed down. The one thing you do realize about creatine, I've tried creatine in the past. I don't do it now, is really, and from what I understand and what I read, so when you take it, it obviously is going to benefit you, but once you stop taking it, you lose all the effects of it. You don't just maintain the strength and muscle that you had while you were on it. It takes time, right? It takes your time for your body to get saturated with creatine. But it's also not a really expensive supplement. It's relatively inexpensive. Mm-hmm. So just like a protein powder, it's similar probably in price, probably even a little bit cheaper. It's totally safe. So it's something that you could experiment with. And what I got considerably stronger and I gained like a good amount of muscle on it. I just decided for me personally, it wasn't something that I wanted to continue to do. So I just kind of experimented with it.
Yeah. I feel like some people reach out about that as like the thing they're missing. Like it is the difference maker. And I feel like if you don't have the basics of nutrition and you're not working hard enough in the gym, you don't have an organized program that you're following and you're really being consistent with that. No, it's not. It's a great add-on for those that already have the wheels are already spinning in the right direction. Right.
100%. And one other thing I wanted to add. I sort of assumed that you were on creatine because you look amazing. Not in the most respectful way. But that also, I think, goes to show you how hard you work in the gym.
Yeah.
Because you don't build a physique like yours going through the motions. So,
well, I have never done creatine. I didn't even know what it was. So, it may change. You know, my son is on creatine right now. He's doing great with it. I mean, it's working really, really well for him. And I'm curious, but I, you know, I'm also kind of like, I've done just fine without it at this point. What, you know, I don't know, you know,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it, Susan.
Well, that's kind of how I look at things right now. You know, if it ain't broke, I'm not going to try to fix something that's not broke. So
I totally respect that. I totally respect that.
Well, Kurt, this has been so much fun getting to know you and chatting, because I feel like we've been connected for so long and it's great to finally really connect.
Absolutely. I really, really appreciate the opportunity. Like I said, I love your Instagram. Been following you for a while and this was a lot of fun. So I'd definitely be able to come on again a different time and talking more fat loss or something.
100%. But before we go, tell everyone where they can find you and connect with you out there.
Okay. So if you want to connect with me, the best place to do that is on Instagram, Kurt Rollins Fitness. So that's just Kurt Rollins Fitness, no spaces, no underscores or anything. You can DM me if you have any questions. I do, you know, I do post, I would say probably 5-6 days a week, you know, Q&As. I'm doing lots of stories as well. So if you ever want to connect with me and find me, you can find me there. We'd love to have you follow me as well. So Susan, thanks again for the opportunity.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming. It was great to chat with you and we will talk soon.
All right. Thanks so much.